Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Hurry! These July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location while supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on South High Street in Columbus.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The James Webb Space Telescope, a marvel of engineering and risk and science. Joe Pappalardo for Popular Mechanics is here to take us to the dramatic moment in the deployment. The mission is launched. The Space Webb Telescope is on its way to its position, a place in space that we will explore called L2. But in the meantime, it must deploy. And the deployment is being handled by a team at Operations Center at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore, Maryland. We're going to go to the moment when I would stop breathing. There's an anomaly. That's a NASA word for things are not as smooth as they used to be. And the engineers are the only people who know how to handle this anomaly. There's no science to it. There's dare, risk, and smart thinking. Joe, a very good evening to you. The anomaly happens of a sudden on L+6. It's during part of the deployment. It has to do with the sunshield cover. What is the sunshield? What is the cover? And what is the challenge for the engineers that day? Good evening to you.
Good evening. And I'm happy we're all reveling in the science, but the engineering had to come first. And this was like the Super Bowl of engineering, especially when it comes to spacecraft. And so, yeah, six days after launch, the biggest, most complicated part of the deployment of the James Webb Space Telescope, which is, when we say deployment, it has to literally transform from something that's rectangular and about the size of a cigarette boat, transforming into the space telescope that we see. So from a rectangle to a massive, complicated machine, and that's extremely sensitive and operating in deep space on top of it. So everything has to go exactly according to plan, and every step is scrutinized before it happens. So 6 days after launch, they're going to deploy the sunshield, which is a huge, basically think of it like a fabric being deployed, dragged out into space like a sail on a sailboat. And what it does is shield the very delicate instruments from sun and temperature so that Webb can peer into the deepest, darkest depths of space without any interference. So the sunshield is a very critical component. It's about the size of a tennis court and has to be unfurled from these pallets. Before any of that happens, though, there's a cover that has to be taken off it and unfurled. And that's when the mission grinds to a halt, because before they take the sunshield out, they notice that the cover may not have unrolled all the way, because there are sensors that line the sunshield cover that trigger as soon as it is unrolled out of the way completely. And two sets of them triggered, and the other two sets didn't trigger. And the mission grinds to a halt at that point. It's all or nothing. There is no way to go out and fix it. This is not Hubble. It's already way past the moon's orbit. So there's no fixing this thing. They've got to puzzle together what is happening up there before they start deploying this all-critical, very sensitive sunshield. And that's when the mission grinds to a halt in L+6.
Now, this is an exciting moment. This is Operations Center. The engineers are gathered around. You describe the atmosphere as that many of them recognized there was an anomaly right away from their sensors. How did they talk to each other? How did they conduct themselves? This is engineering at its best. Did they become that robotic voice that pilots achieve when the aircraft is in trouble? Did they raise their voices, lower their voices? Did they huddle together? What did it look like, Joe?
Well, you can't accuse anyone of mass panic, especially over the comms channels. That's all very disciplined over the radio nets and everything. But there were dozens of people who saw that they're watching the same telemetry screens and they all see the same thing. And one of the people who was in the Mission Operations Center, they call it the MOC, said that everyone was spinning around in their chairs. And then everyone said, all right, let's get to work. What's next? And what's next is the at 24 hours a day on this mission, there's someone called an anomaly coordinator, pre-designated just for this kind of emergency. The anomaly coordinator convenes a team in a separate room. There's a classic NASA whiteboard. There's spitballing ideas. There's people running in and out with data. There's people in the room who get sent out to gather specific data. And they're trying to puzzle together what's going on in the spacecraft, because the mission cannot continue unless they know the sun shield can be deployed without any kind of problem. And that is the puzzle that these team of engineers and the ANCO, the anomaly coordinator, whose name was Greg Anderson that day, is NASA flight controller. And it's his job to coordinate the response, the emergency response to this situation.
Do they have, similar to Hollywood's version of Apollo 13, do they have a mock-up or a dummy they can go to, a room where they have another telescope that looks like it? Do they have a mechanical way of responding to this? How do they work it, Joe?
Yeah, well, the whiteboard is the classic tool, but the 21st century version is a 3D digital model of the telescope. That's showing every bit of data visually representative as what's happening. There's no cameras on board the spacecraft. They can't see what's happening. They only have the data, but they have a visual representation of what the data is showing them. So they've got this on a screen, and they're able to manipulate it because it's in 3D and see what kind of information can be gleaned from the spacecraft. And this becomes very critical because when the cover is fully rolled up, it should be blocking a couple of temperature sensors from the sunlight, which means those temperature sensors are going to be lower. And that would be a telltale sign that the cover has been unrolled enough so that the next step can be done safely. So they send someone out from the room. Once they see that on the 3D model, they say, well, we need the data from those sensors. Go get it. Someone goes running out to go fetch the data. And when it comes back, they see these telltale drops in temperature. And that's one of the key pieces of information that this anomaly response team is going to bring up to the upper mission management to say, here's the results of our ad hoc investigation. Here's why we think it's okay to keep going. And now it's up to you, mission manager, to give the green light to go to the next step or not.
So they have some indication that the cover has been removed correctly, but they have other indication that doesn't confirm it. And they're balancing these two pieces of data. And is there a timeline here, Joe? I know it isn't in position yet. I think you said it's traveling like 20,000 miles per hour. It's moving in space. And they need to get this deployed by X date. Is there time pressure on them? It's New Year's Eve. Do they have to do it in the next hour? Can they wait days?
They can wait as long as they feel as is necessary. To be honest, the timeline that they gave for this deployment was always extremely conservative. And they, on many parts of this mission, have blown right past it and done things a lot faster. So they can go fast, go slow, hit pause as long as they need to. So there's not time pressure per se, but there is every other kind of pressure on them. There's the international partners. There's the United States. There's the world media. There's there's the entire global aerospace press corps breathing down their neck. Everyone needs, plus the astronomers, plus the congressmen who paid for the thing. I mean, the list goes on and on and on and on and on. So they will take it slow. They will do only what they have to do in terms of risk. But at the end of the day, they can't see with 100% certainty what's happening with the sunshield cover. They're going to have to do an extremely well-calculated risk, but it's a risk. There was a lot of exhale breaths when that sunshield gets dragged out and there's no problems, because they had information from the temperature sensors. They had information from the way the center of gravity moved, vibrations. They had other data that supported the fact that this element had moved on board the spacecraft as it should have, the sunshield cover. However, nothing's 100%. I mean, when their sensor's telling you something's wrong, you're always going to be worried. And they were despite their confidence in what they recommended, they were still extremely relieved that it went as they had expected.
All right. The expectation then is the cover has withdrawn and that it's casting a shadow. Therefore, it's okay to use what is called the boom to extend the boom. Is that what they're now going to do, to extend the sun shield?
Right. Yeah, exactly. The again, it's sort of like a sailboat sail coming out, and that motorized boom drags out that membrane out to so that it forms a nice big triangle. And then another one does it on the other side. So it's one side and then the other side. Uh-huh. The other side didn't have any have that kind of problem, but that initial side did. So the motor starts going, and it moves in increments too. So it's 10 minutes and stop, and then verify the data, 10 minutes and stop and verify the data until it's fully deployed. So this is a slow, torturous process as the data comes back. And every time the data packets come back, the people in MOC are you know, confident, but deep down, very nervous that there's going to be something, another anomaly that's going to come up in this very, very important process. And sure enough, they deploy both sides of the sun shield. And most of the people in the mock, at least the ones who live in Maryland and aren't staying in hotels, make it home New Year's Eve in time to see the ball drop.
Where is the, what's the expectation of where the cover is? You have one of your informants says to you in the article, we think that it just didn't roll up quite as tightly in a zero gravity as it did in our ground test. Is it still hanging on the telescope, the misbehaving cover?
Yeah, I mean, they don't know that. What I've heard from the most amount of people is that there's probably another panel that it's sort of resting on, and that prevented it from sort of dropping on the backside of the pallet. So that's their best theory. That's their, and it's going to probably be a theory until the end of time, exactly what happened with the sun. Very few people are probably going to be paying attention to it, but I'm always going to wonder. And if an alien scoops it up and brings it back, that's going to be one of the things I check out.
Everybody's breathing now, and they go home, and the next day they go back to being engineering. This is a marvel of engineering. Credit to them, because something that's just a footnote in the history of the James Webb telescope could have been the end of time. Let's go back to the beginning of time when we come back. Where is the telescope now? What is it doing? What is it? What are its capabilities? Why does it look like a very unusual construction, a vast unusual construction that's all gold? Joseph Pappalardo, writing for Popular Mechanics about the deployment of the James Webb Space Telescope and the early images that we have. Joe is also the author of the new book, Red Sky Morning, the epic true story of Texas Ranger Company F. I'm John Batchelor.
I'm Rodney Williams.
And I'm Travis Holloway. Welcome to the Wealth Break Podcast, a real conversation about finance.
Let's be honest. Building wealth doesn't look the same for everyone.
I feel like sometimes being broke is a cycle and that we might have to revisit that.
And we're not stopping at success stories.
What happens when it doesn't go right? How do you cope with it?
Because wealth isn't just about money. It's about creating a life where you thrive and help others do the same.
Listen to the Wealth Break Podcast on the iHeartRadio app,
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
We all deserve some yay in our day. So say hello to Hello. Hello makes oral and personal care products that add wonder to your routine, like a toothpaste that makes brushing fun for kids. It's called Unicorn Sparkle Toothpaste. It tastes like rainbows and sunshine, works brilliantly, and it's fun. So it's pretty much magic. And for the adults, Hello Anti-Plaque and Whitening Toothpaste, which is just as good without the unicorns. Visit HelloProducts.com and let Hello add some everyday yay into your life.